Welcome to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field. I'm your host of the show. And this is our Veterans Day program, Veterans Day 2011. I'm here with my guest, Charity Manis. We'll be talking with her in just a minute. I'd also like to say that we are in a new studio for KVGC Radio. We're right on Main Street in Jackson, next to the kitchen store, 163 Main Street in Jackson. And there are windows out front. You can come and kind of peek in the windows and wave to us. That'd be great. I'm looking for your holiday writing because we have Thanksgiving and Christmas coming up. And not just Christmas, doesn't matter what religion you are, if you're Jewish or whatever. If you have some holiday writing, a poem, a short little story, anything up to 5 minutes, I'm looking for things from you that I can read on the air that would be timely for Thanksgiving or the December holiday season. That'd be lots of fun to have. If I get enough of them from you, I can do a whole show with no guest, just holiday music and readings from you folks. I have the morning workout this morning. It's sent in by Evelyn Stetcher. And because this is a Veterans Day show where we're celebrating our veterans, this poem kind of ties in with it. It's a little bit of a stretch, but Evelyn has written a poem about an experience that her grandmother had almost 100 years ago. Maybe it's her great-grandmother. Her folks came from Europe and immigrated to this country and went through the whole immigration process. Unfortunately, it didn't go too well. This ties in with Veterans Day because we have, America is such a wonderful, strong country that people from all over the world want to live here. And our veterans help make it so. So Evelyn Stetcher's poem called My Lost Aunt ties in with all that. My Lost Aunt. Grandma herded her three children together, huddled, fearful in that tumultuous barn-like space. 6 years without Grandpa, saving every kopeck for their passage. Then the terrible voyage to join him, now to be questioned in a strange tongue, measured, weighed, confused by shaking heads and dark glances, aimed at little Shanna, not perfect enough for the promised land, so gentle with her long curls and smooth, wide brow. How could anything be wrong with our Shanna? The dark, aching voyage back to that imperfect land of cold and hopelessness. Grandma's lips set in the grim line they would wear for the rest of her life. The parting, the sickening farewell to Shanna, left behind as we moved on to our future in the new world. Little imperfect Shanna, waving on the shore, never to be seen, never to be seen again. Evelyn Stetcher. Sometimes we forget how difficult it was for the people who came here and are still coming here. Now, our topic today, as I said, is Veterans Day. And my guest is Charity Manis, who has written a book compiled mostly of letters written by a young soldier from Vietnam to his wife back home. It's a very touching and sad book because he never made it back. And this is going to be a difficult show for me to do. I want to read you a part of this, one of his letters in the book. The book is titled, It's Lonely Here in Hell, Love Letters from Vietnam. And the soldier's name is James D. Piper. He's from California, and he had gotten married to his high school sweetheart at age 19 and 1 month later received his draft notice. He's writing here in this letter on March 4th, 1967, just about 5 weeks before he's killed. "Dearest darling, I've got some good news for you. Today we got on some helicopters and came back to Ann K to run patrol on the perimeter. I sure am glad to get out of the boonies. We will still be sleeping out in the open, but at least it's a lot safer around Ann K. That should make you feel better. Last night, I had to check out a small cave. I was real scared, so I took a shotgun and flashlight with me as I poked my head into the cave. I didn't see anything, but I told the sergeant I heard something moving in there and didn't want to go in. So I took a hand grenade and pulled the pin. My sergeant had told me I only had 4 seconds to get out of the cave after I threw the grenade, so I had quite a way to go after I threw it to get clear of the blast, almost 20 yards. This is what he looked like, what it looked like. And he draws a sketch showing the cave and a little high ground that he had to go over, and then a gully, and then another small hill that he had to navigate to escape the blast. I crawled into the cave and threw the grenade. Then I ran and jumped into the gully and still had 3 seconds to go after I was safe from the blast. That's how fast I moved. As it turned out, there wasn't anything in the cave anyway, but I was still scared. Right now I'm back at base camp in Ann K, in the barracks, with an air mattress as snug as a bug in a rug. All I've been thinking about is you and home. I wish I could be there with you right now. It sure is lonely here in hell." So that's where the title of the book came from. And Charity, you chose that. And you went through all of these letters. Welcome, Charity.
Thank you for having me.
It's nice having you with us today. And thank you for doing this show with me and helping us to celebrate Veterans Day.
You're welcome.
Now, I want to say before we get started that I'm not a journalist, and I'm not going to be very objective in this discussion that we have today. If you talk to people in my age group, you're going to find a lot of strong feelings about the Vietnam War, even today. Feelings run very deep, and I do want to say, though, that while the everything about that war troubles me, one thing that troubles me the most is the way our veterans were treated.
Absolutely.
What have you learned about that?
I've learned that it's taken over 40 years for our country to give them the respect and honor that they deserve. And for some, it's a little bit too little, too late. For others, they're courageous enough to accept the respect, but still wise enough to question it.
Well, they didn't get it when they needed it.
No, they didn't get the respect, the support, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. And that's really tragic.
It is.
We were so confused. America was such, it's a changed country now. We are so different than we were before Vietnam. We were very innocent before Vietnam.
Yes.
And we believed totally in everything the government told us, and I'm talking about the masses. I'm not talking about some individual people, but we believed pretty much. We went along with a lot of things, and we had come through some horribly tough times too, with World War I and World War II, and the Depression, and in World War II especially, we banded together. We stood behind our boys, and we had all kinds of slogans that all kinds of places. Americans sacrificed. They cut back on coffee. They cut back on sugar. Everything was rationed. You couldn't. I remember when my father came home from the Navy in World War II. He wanted to get a tricycle for me, And we were living in Buffalo, New York. And he and my mother hunted all over Buffalo looking for a tricycle that was not made of wood. They wanted one made of steel.
Right.
They finally found one. And I promptly rode it right down the cellar steps, but scared them to death. But anyway, it was really hard back then. And but the fact that the people had to sacrifice and pull together and do things, roll bandages and send them over, you know, it brought the country together.
Right.
And our country hasn't been together in that way since.
No, it has not. I agree with you. I also feel that if we had taught more about the Vietnam War in our school systems, I was not taught about it, my children were not taught about it, that we would not be repeating history. We would be learning from it, and we would have been able to apply what we'd learned in modern-day warfare.
Uh-huh. And maybe avoiding some of the modern-day warfare.
Avoiding some of the more difficult, yes.
Yes. Well, okay. Well, now that's a very potent topic, so we'd better take a break right now. We'll be back shortly after these announcements. Everybody stay with us, please. We're looking forward to more of this conversation with Charity Menace. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field, and we are talking today with Charity Menace about her book, It's Lonely Here in Hell, Love Letters from Vietnam. Charity, how did you arrive at that title? I just read a letter from the book, but you say that there's more to how you came to use that title.
There's definitely more to the story. When Mickey approached me in 2010, asking me if I would write a book based on love letters from Nam, I was a little skeptical because I had always written humor columns and more lighthearted genres.
Mm-hmm.
When she told me they were letters from her husband who was killed in action, I couldn't turn it down. There was absolutely no way I could turn that down. It took her approximately 5 months, 6 months, maybe even longer, to actually get the letters to me. It's a difficult thing to actually give them up. So April 4th, 2011, she asked her husband, Larry Phillips, who also is a Vietnam vet, to go downstairs into the storage and pull out the box of letters. He went downstairs, pulled out the box of letters, plopped them in her lap, dust and all. She picked one letter out of the whole box. They were not in chronological order. Huh. She opened it up. It said April 4th, 1967.
Oh, my.
It was April 4th, 2011, that day.
Goodness.
She called me. She said, Charity, it's now. Come get the letters now. She put it back in the box, didn't read it. I went over to her house. She was just kind of numb, sitting there numb. She didn't want to read the letters but didn't know what to do. But she said she felt that was a calling, that was something that had to be done.
Uh-huh.
I asked her which letter it was. She pulled it out, and that's the letter that had It's Lonely Here in Hell. So the very first letter she pulled out, written April 4th, 1967.
What a sign.
Had not been opened in 44 years.
I think maybe Jim wanted to have his letters read.
I think Jim was ready to have his letters read. So before I went any further, though, I did contact the family. He has three younger brothers, and they were all 100% supportive of this and so honored and so excited that he was going to be remembered. And not only he was going to be remembered, but all the soldiers that didn't come home.
Yes, because his story speaks for all of them.
Speaks for many of them.
Yeah.
That many times I've heard from the veterans who have read this book that they said, oh, my gosh, those were my letters. I wrote those home. I even heard from one whose older brother was killed in action. He said, those are the letters my brother wrote home to my mom. And he couldn't barely get through the first two chapters. He said it was just reliving the loss of his brother. So it is a very difficult read for those who were there.
Uh-huh.
But it's very important that we understand how important these letters were, the lifeline, to get them through one more day, just one more day.
Mm-hmm.
They needed to know that somebody was at home loving them, waiting for them.
Yes. The letters must have been tremendously important, and they went through such a difficult time. Of course, all soldiers do.
Yes.
In any war.
Well, these my son served in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Cuba, and
oh,
these letters were extremely similar to my son's.
Uh-huh.
So, and same age as my son, and I am just so fortunate my son came home. I am so fortunate. So, it crosses many generations, the same need for family.
That's right. That's right, it does. And I noticed when I was reading the book that Jim grew from a young boy.
Yes.
Newlywed, young boy, only married a month when he had to leave his bride and go off to basic training. And he grew up in the 7 months that he spent in the service. He became a man.
He did. He absolutely became a man.
And the letters show the transition. I noticed that throughout the whole basic training, he's stateside, and so his letters are filled with how much he misses her and how much he loves her, and he's counting the months and days until they can see each other again. When he gets what they call in country,
mm-hmm.
when he gets to Vietnam, his letters change.
Yes,
yeah.
Drastically. The very first day, his letter is bright and chipper. Oh, it's a beautiful country and the sights and the smells. The next day, not so bright and chipper.
That's
yeah,
right.
It changes dramatically.
Yeah. Yes, and he mentioned some of the times being in, let's see, there's one entry where he talks about just the experience. Page 185. Oh, yes, because one other thing that he's always worried about is whether or not his wife is getting enough pay back home. Is she getting the allotment checks?
Her whole $96 a month, something of that effect.
Yes.
Yes. He was very concerned that she was getting what she needed, and she was using the PX, and she was using what was available to her. He was very concerned about
that. And they were just barely getting by.
Barely.
Here these our servicemen risk their lives, and they shouldn't have to worry about whether or not the family at home...
She ended up moving home. His wife ended up moving back with her mother and father and little brother.
Just to survive.
Just to survive, and also she needed that support. She needed to be with people.
Sure.
So,
would you like to read a little bit of that that page, 185?
Yes, I'm going to skip a couple paragraphs, but I'll go right to the part where he says, do you know those cigarettes you sent me? Well, I fell in a hole filled with water, and two packs got soaked. If you send some more, please send a few small baggies to keep them and my wallet dry in case I fall in another one. I've been reading a book called The Ugly American, and I was almost through with it. That got soaked, too, so I had to throw it away. If you could see me now, you would disown me. I'm filthy dirty. My hands are rough and scratched. I haven't shaved for 4 days, and I stink so bad I can hardly live with myself. I love you, darling, very much, and I need you now more than anything else in the world.
He also wrote about being afraid on page 186. Part of his letter says, honey, I hate it over here, and I'm scared all the time. When we go through villages and pick up suspects, it's not too dangerous. But when we set up at night, that's when it gets scary. Every night we call in artillery support just in case we run into Charlie. Of course, Charlie has been a universal name for the enemy for decades. And all night long you can hear our artillery going off all around us. And it sure is good to know that it's on our side, even if we can't get any sleep.
It's important at this time to note that each letter I make sure that I add historical documentation of what happened on each dated letter on that date in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
I utilize declassified CIA documents, Pentagon papers, and the wider history group, which is history.net, allowed me full use of all of their historical documentation.
Mm.
So during the time when he wrote that he calling in the artillery support, there's also private, I'm going to read this from the book, private correspondence between President Johnson and Ho Chi Minh. Quote, North Vietnam's position is hardening. Communist forces have become more aggressive in recent weeks. There are indications that after Ho Lol, infiltration may be picking up. Hanoi may also be reinforcing the DMZ. Some new weapons have been introduced in South Vietnam. In short, recent North Vietnamese actions seem to assume a further period of heightened military efforts and probably also further American escalation.
Yes.
It was very difficult for me to transcribe his letters and to feel him where he was in his life at that time, and then to see what was actually happening with our government and how the war was being handled. It was difficult to transfer back and forth between the two worlds, so to speak.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, what were a lot of your feelings and emotions, and did you, what surprises did you have as you worked on this book?
I still would like to believe that I'm naive enough that I can believe my government and my media. And I found as far back as in the late 60s, early 60s, we couldn't. And that's really a shame. And I'm glad that I've raised all my children to question. It's very important. Don't just believe what you read or don't believe what somebody's told you.
Mm-hmm.
Find out. Find the answer. And I'm glad I did this, but I just felt that our men were pretty much left high and dry. I don't think that there was a whole lot of organization. That's my opinion. I hope I don't hurt anyone's feelings with that.
It's a free country. You're entitled to your opinion. And it's a free country because of our veterans.
Right.
We'll be back in just a few minutes with more from Charity Manis. Okay, we're back with Charity Manis talking about her book, It's Lonely Here in Hell, about James D. Piper, young soldier, who was killed in Vietnam during only 7 months of service. Charity, you said that you researched in the CIA documents and other places to get the scoop on what was happening during these times when he was writing his letters. How did you go about all that?
Well, actually, it was hit and miss a lot, because when originally Mickey gave me the letters, I wasn't sure how I was going to turn these letters into a book. I knew I needed it to be nonfiction. I did not want his words to be classified as fiction. So I knew I needed to go on a different road, and This is not my genre. I write humor.
That's right.
So for me to travel out of this box, it was stop and go, and then I slowly started getting help. And when the wider history group just opened up their use of their site, all of a sudden just everything started falling into place. The Lyndon Baines Johnson's library, they responded to me, said I could utilize anything. It just went on from there. So it was actually very helpful. I actually got A&E permission to utilize their historical documentation, but I just got it last week. The book's already been released.
Uh-huh.
It took them 7 months to respond to me.
Oh. Okay. Well, now how did you get you said you had to get permission from the wider history group?
You have to get permission before you reprint anything that they have printed.
They
are copywritten. Yes. They write the Armchair General, the Vietnam War Times, Civil War Times, military history. They own history.net, It's a large historical group, and you need to make sure you have permission before you print anything.
I see. Well, before you print anything,
yes.
But not you can go there and anyone can go
anyone
there and research
can go there
at
and
any
research.
Time.
But if you're going to print something,
yes.
You better have permission.
Well, that's true.
So I have those letters safely tucked away.
How did since you normally write humor, this was a huge stretch for you. How did you first even think about how you were going to present it?
I first started transcribing his letters. And then as I was transcribing his letters, the curiosity started getting the better of me. When he would say something in his letter, like, for instance, he would say, "We're not going to Nam, we're going to Germany." And my first thought was, "You're kidding me, right? You really believe that?" And then I thought, well, I better find out why he believes this and what really was happening at that time. And that's pretty much how that started, that the historical documentation then needed to be added. Because what he was being told and what was really happening and what we were being told as citizens in this country at the time and what was really happening, it's all different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's how.
Of course, sometimes in a huge organization like the military, or when you work for a big company or whatever, anytime there are lots and lots of people involved, rumors get started,
yes.
Stories get started, and
yes.
that's just pretty normal.
But
I think
they were grasping to straws also. Somebody
yes.
says, "Oh, we're going to Germany." Yes, we're going to Germany.
Yeah.
Anything but Vietnam.
Hopeful thinking.
So, yeah. And mm. I would hold on that straw also if that was all I could hold on to.
When you're facing what they were facing, yes,
yes.
I can imagine they would grasp at straws.
Yes.
And today we don't have the draft, thank goodness. And of course, he ended up in the service because he didn't want to go. He did not enlist.
Right.
He was drafted?
We don't have the draft, but we do have the
selective service.
Yes, both my sons had to sign that when they were 18 years old.
That's what the draft is.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to enact the draft for that to
right,
come into play.
Right, that way they already have everything all lined up,
that's
all their
right.
ducks in a row. My oldest son has already served, and my second son is a firefighter, so I don't know that they'll, if a draft occurs, that he'll go. But
yeah, well...
So.
We thank you for both your son's service.
Thank you. Thank you.
And
can I
yes.
say just a bit
sure.
about my upcoming project? Is that possible right now?
Sure, because it's tied in with this book, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
What happened when I started writing this book, or actually when people found I was writing this book, veterans started coming forward and just telling me their stories, and I realized that they needed their stories told. They need to have people hear what they felt, what they saw. So I'm writing a book. It's called In Our Words, and it's actually veteran stories. It's what they saw, what they felt, and what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's regardless of what the media portrayed or the government portrayed or anything of that sort. I am requiring a DD-214 documentation that they were there where they said they were. But so far I've had 3 memoirs sent to me, and I've interviewed 5 Vietnam veterans. I'm working on Vietnam right now. I'll try to do a series of all the separate, conflicts. The stories are just so amazing. The resiliency of these men to then come back and function.
So how do these people, if we have people listening today who were in Vietnam, how did they contact you?
CharityManus@live.com.
Okay. @live.com.
Correct.
Well, that's easy
email.
Enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's easy enough.
And Manus is spelled with 2 S's.
M-A-N-E-S-S.
Yes.
Yes. Now, there's an interesting story. You met some of Jim Piper's friends who served with him.
Yes.
In the military, not necessarily in Vietnam with him. And... one of them had a story about a torn dollar bill.
Yes, Abel went into the Air Force at the time that Jim went into the Army. And Abel came to my first book signing. He's from San Lorenzo. These young men went to school together, and then they ended up going to war, not together. And when Jim left Abel, he tore a dollar bill in half and said, "Abel, here, take this. When I come back, we'll have a beer." So Jim never came back. Abel did. At my first book signing on April 23rd at the sports pub, because that's what Mickey and Larry own, Abel came and he wished and gifted that torn dollar to Mickey.
Oh, she must have been very touched.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was an amazing time. Yeah.
I bet it was. Now, Mickey and Larry's Sports Pub is in Copperopolis.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, well, what's the name of it?
It's Mickey and Larry's Sports Pub.
Oh, well, that's easy enough. Is it right there on the town square?
No, it's in the older town. It's in the older part of town.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
On Copper Cove Drive and O'Burns Ferry Road.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe some people will go in and say hello after they've heard this broadcast.
So it would be wonderful if they went in, because there's actually a collage on the wall of rubbings from the Vietnam Wall of Jim Piper.
Oh, okay.
They have an American Heroes bulletin board. All the local children who are serving, young men and women, sorry, not children. They have pictures up there. Also, locals who have passed, their pictures are up there. So they've got like a memorial wall inside their pub for American heroes.
That's wonderful. Yeah. So if you're in the Copperopolis area, you should go over and say hello to them. I'm sure they'd be glad to see you. And again, anyone listening who has had a war experience and would like to share their story with Charity, they should...
charitymanis@live.com.
@live.com. Okay.
Can I send a quick thank you to Jim Vinson? I know you're out there somewhere. I appreciate all your secret squirrel help. Information I couldn't have received if I didn't have your help. And I want to thank Marine Rick Ryan for utilizing your picture of the Vietnam Wall and bringing home rubbings for Mickey. I appreciate all your help. And Judy Hewitt, English professor at Columbia College, for editing my book. I appreciate all of your help.
Wonderful. Okay. It takes a lot of people to put a book out, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to any writers groups or anything? Did you run this by anybody as you were putting it together?
No.
No. You know, you're always welcome at Writers Unlimited over in San Andreas.
Well, by the time I finish working for my news site and writing and raising kids, I don't have time to attend meetings.
Probably not. Yes. What else do you write, Charity? You do a lot of things.
I run the Copper Gazette, which is a news site just for Copperopolis. It's an online news site. And I interview the most amazing people. If people would just spend a minute to listen to somebody else's life story, you'd find it's absolutely amazing. Even though they might think it's boring, it's not. So I meet amazing people. I write interviews. I put up the news. And I cover the events of the town. So I love the little town.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And how can people go to that website?
Just Google Copper Gazette, and there I am.
Copper Gazette. Okay. Was that your baby? Was
yes,
that your
it was.
Idea?
I started it January 4th.
Oh, just this
year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's almost a year old.
I hit over 200,000 hits about 4 weeks ago.
How wonderful.
For such a small town, that is amazing.
Yeah, that is good.
Mm-hmm.
That's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've also written some books.
Yes.
Yes.
I've written two collections of my humor columns called Welcome to the Country. It's my 2009 collection and my 2010 collection. I've written two romances. One's called Prince Charming. No, it's not. It's about a dog. The dog's name is Prince Charming.
Oh, how cute.
And one is about Hopefully. I tend to like to read romances just to clear my mind, because I don't take a lot of effort to read. But then I found that when I was reading romances, they were all about these perfect people with these perfect lives and money at their disposal, and that wasn't reality. So mine are all about women between 45 and 60 becoming independent and accidentally falling in love.
Oh, how wonderful.
And then I wrote one more, a memoir, Positive Test to Empty Nest. It's about the very first day you find out you're pregnant to the very first day your first child leaves the nest and all the humorous things that go on in between.
Oh, my gosh, that sounds like fun.
It's hilarious. And, I admit a lot of things mothers usually don't admit publicly.
Oh. Do you want to share any of that with us?
Oh, let's see. How about the kids pulling a snow disc behind a golf cart in the mud and coming back to the house so covered in mud that you couldn't even tell they were children, so I just hosed them off. Keep in mind, this is in January. hosing them off in January. So things of that sort.
I see. Well, that's
That sounds like a lot of fun.
I had our four children that we had, and then we also raised my niece, so I had five children. So five children can create a lot of havoc.
And lots of animals where you live, too.
We tried to raise our own beef, pork, chickens, et cetera.
Oh.
So it was easier. It was better for the children.
Yes, good experience.
I spin my own fiber from my alpacas.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, you have alpacas.
I do.
Oh, are they darling?
Yes.
They are so cute.
When they're not spitting and kicking, they're beautiful.
Okay, well, we're going to take another break. We'll be back very soon. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field, and I'm talking today with Charity Manis about her book. And I just remembered, though, that I haven't told you very much about what I need you folks to do to get ready for the holidays. I'm hoping that you'll send me some poetry or short fiction having to do with Thanksgiving or the holiday season in December or just plain old wintertime. It can be 5 minutes long instead of the usual 2 minutes. And if I get enough from you folks, I will have a program before Christmas where I just read listeners' work. I would love to do that. So get busy and send me some good stuff. And, of course, we always have the morning workout that I read on all the shows. And that should be about 2 minutes long. And again, it can be prose or poetry. I would love to give you some a chance to hear your work read on the air. So send me things. And you can send those to me at writers@kvgcradio.com. I also want to let you know that finally my website is building. And you can listen to the very first show that I did back in June with Monica Rose. It is on my website at www.manzapress.com. That's manzapress.com. Monica's is the first show, so it's all the way down at the bottom. We have space to load all the other shows that have come afterwards, but there's nothing there yet. Although by the time you hear this, there might be. So go down to show number one. You'll hear Monica's program. And above that, we'll start filling in the other shows. Now, back to Charity and your book.
Yes.
It's Lonely Here in Hell. Charity, you're the mother of four children.
Correct.
You also raised a niece, and you've got horses and llamas and alpacas. Horses and alpacas. What's the difference between an alpaca and a llama?
A llama is much larger, and the fiber is much more coarse.
Oh, I see. And you gather the alpaca's wool. You comb it?
I have them sheared.
You have them sheared.
And then I actually send it to a factory to have it cleaned because that's really labor-intensive work. And
I bet
then when it comes
be.
Back to me, I spin it up, turn it into yarn, knit with it, crochet with it, weave
oh,
with
wonderful.
It.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, my gosh. So you are one busy lady.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, the farm has gotten very small since I only have one child left at home, so we don't need to raise all that meat anymore. I have one cow and two alpaca.
Oh, okay.
So, but yes.
Yeah. So how on earth did you get all the writing done? What's your writing process and
well,
how do you do it?
Much to my son's disappointment, he would come home from school every day and pretty much find me sitting on the computer writing, writing, and writing. There was a couple nights he had pancakes. but I would find that I would be working for hours on end and look up at the clock and can't believe that 6 hours had gone by. The research, especially of the CIA documents, was so intense. It was there was one time in particular that I was researching for 4 hours, and I came up with one sentence of documentation that I could utilize in the book.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's like, okay, well, I wasn't sure if I was going to say, yay, I found the proverbial needle in the haystack, or if I was angry that it took me so long to find it. But either way, it's in the book. Can't remember which one it is.
Well, I do remember where you showed, too, another CIA document that you spent hours researching, and when you got there, it was just all blacked out because it was top secret or something.
Right. How even though it says they're declassified, they still marked out a lot of
Oh, that's
writing.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So it's declassified, and yet it's still some of it is still secret.
Mm-hmm.
Did you run into that with the Lyndon Johnson papers as well?
No, the Lyndon Baines Johnson's library was wonderfully laid out as far as research. It was done chronologically. It was also cross-referenced with names, places. Very easy to research through his diaries and through his site. I didn't utilize much out of his diaries. They were kept by a secretary, so it was LBJ woke up, LBJ brushed his teeth, LBJ had coffee, LBJ, it's like, I really don't want to know what he did. You know, he put on his robe, he, you know, it's like,
oh
please. So you did have to read about 6 or 7 pages of a diary to get to the meat of what he actually, who he met with or what discussion took place.
Uh-huh.
And then once you found out who he met with, then there was another document you had to go to read what happened at that meeting, because that's kept separately from a diary. But
and when you some of the entries in the book that you've put there are a little bit hard to understand in their context. It must have been very difficult to figure out all the information that you were seeing.
It was extremely difficult to figure out the information, and I do realize that some of them are difficult to understand. However, if I were to have changed any of the wording,
mm-hmm.
then I wasn't utilizing documentation.
I see.
So I was stuck between a rock and a hard place because I needed that information to be placed in this book.
Uh-huh.
But
yes,
I couldn't add my own words, otherwise it's commentary.
Uh-huh.
It's not.
Yes. Well, having that documentation does add a lot, because we have this young man writing letters home to his bride, and you tell us what's been going on in the overall big picture. And
yes.
It does make it puts it in context. You mentioned an interesting fact to me about, of course, we know that there were 58,000 people of our soldiers killed in Vietnam. But you mentioned to me how many of those were draftees.
The records that I recall researching said that approximately 17,000 were draftees.
And all the others were enlisted.
Enlisted. So the numbers I have in my book here, it says by the end of the war, the total numbers estimated to be killed in action, 58,267, wounded in action, 303,644, missing in action, 1,711, with a total of nearly 3.5 million that served in the Vietnam Theater of Operations. 3.5 million.
Million. Wow.
And what have we done for them?
Good question. Yes. Yes. It's time that we really say thank you.
Absolutely. And absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, on my very last page, under my picture, it said, I would like to take this opportunity to thank all veterans from the bottom of my heart for your service, forever in your debt, Charity Manis. And I do. It's from the bottom of my heart. I appreciate every single one of you. Thank you.
That's great. That's great. Now, you're having some book signings.
Yes, I am.
People can go and meet you.
Yes.
Where are some of these taking place? At Once Upon a Time Bookstore. Where
Once
is that?
Once Upon a Time Bookstore is in Town Square. It's from 12 to 2 on November 26th.
Yes, and that's in Copperopolis.
Yeah, it is in Copperopolis. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also having one...
December 10th?
December 10th at Bristol's Cafe in Arnold. December 17th at Frog's Tooth Winery in Murphy's. And... in case any of you are from Tennessee and are listening, I'm having a couple in Tennessee in the first week of December.
Oh, hey, great. You know what? We don't have a listener from Tennessee yet. And I have just a few copies left, folks. I'm hoping to keep increasing the listening audience. And so I have this deal where if you contact me and you are from a state where I did not previously ever hear from a listener, I'm going to send you a free copy of Manzanita Writers Press's Wild Edges, our latest anthology. So contact me if you are from Tennessee or any other state that I have not heard from, or Canada or Mexico or wherever, by sending an email to me at writers@kvgcradio.com. And don't forget about... my website, too, which is www.manzapress.com, to see the beginning of our shows being archived. Now, Charity, one last thing. Where can they buy the book if they can't get to your book signings?
It's available currently at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and Once Upon a Time Bookstore in Town Square in Copperopolis.
Okay. Well, thank you. Look for that book, folks. And I hope you'll come back and join us again next week here on Manzanita Voices. Thank you for listening. I hope that this Veterans Day weekend has been a good one for you. Once again, we would like to say thank you to all the veterans.
Thank you.
Take care.
You've been listening to Manzanita Voices, a production of the Manzanita Writers Press, an affiliate of the Calaveras County Arts Council.